Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber. Hello, everyone.
And welcome to RCS Rocking Chair Sessions, Volume 107 with Monique Lassoy. Welcome, Monique.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming to sit with us and rock with us. Prior to beginning, we were talking about bios for some reason, and you mentioned you have a 30-second biography spiel, kind of like your elevator pitch, to discuss your artwork and stuff. But would you like to share that with us?
My 30-second? Okay. I was born in Holland in The Hague. I went to school there. I went to art school there at the Royal Academy of Arts, got kicked out again in my second year. Then I started traveling around and doing everything that I wanted to do. Ended up working for the government in Holland. Then I said, no, that's not for me. And at the same time, when I realized that, I met this beautiful guy in Miami. So I moved down here and fell in love with the weather and the light, and I took up painting again. And I will do that until the very, very end, wherever that is.
Done. 30 seconds.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to our session for today. Just kidding. I wanted to start off with that because more than anything here at Rocking Chair Sessions, we celebrate artists and what they're doing. Monique is here joining us in celebrating today that we have donated to the Vasari Project with the Miami-Dade County Public Library, sessions 1 through 100, and being how she's a session number 107. For the next 100 sessions, we will hopefully be accruing. Those will eventually be also donated to the Vasari Project, where they will live on forever.
Forever and ever.
Yeah. After our collective deaths.
After our demise, it will continue. It'll be our little immortal footprint, so that's exciting. So yay! Your audio will live on, like the Titanic song.
You're being immortalized.
Which is pretty spooky, but kind of fun.
That sounds eerie. I know.
Well, let's talk about your last name. Before we started, I said how you pronounced it, and you said it was Lassoy.
Yes.
Where does that name originally come from? Is it also from France?
France. From my mother's side, because this name is from my mother's side, and also because art came from my mother's side. My father's side had nothing to do with it. I'm sorry, but that was it, you know.
Anybody of my relatives
hearing this, you know it. So... they actually escaped France as Huguenots. And just to give you an indication how warped my family is that they were Protestants going to Holland, refused to speak Dutch for about 200 years because they were nobility, so they spoke French. And while Holland was turning into a Protestant country, they decided it was a good idea to become Catholics again. And I'm going like, why would you even bother? So, yeah.
Wow.
And on your mother's side, who was it that was more into the arts that kind of sort of inspired you?
Oh, in different generations, but the most famous one is Willem de Kooning. And he left for America before the war. And during and after the war, he was, of course, the prolific one with the abstract expressionism. So, yeah, and I don't live up to that, people, so don't worry, I don't live up to that.
You live up to your own
That's pretty big shoes.
My mother always says to me, why don't you go more abstract, Mom? Don't go there.
I think everybody
Someone did that already. I don't want to be compared.
And he was very expressive about it, so let it be.
The one parental influence who wishes your art looked like something else. Like, why don't you do this instead? And you're like, oh.
Oh, yeah. She says, why don't you do landscapes? Don't do landscapes. But you did it for me. I did it for you.
Because you're my mother.
That's it.
So funny. What type of school did you go to? Because I know that Maria Teresa did music as well as regular schooling. Did you have arts influence in your programming when you were a child?
Well, in Holland, it's kind of different because we had art classes in elementary school. We had art classes in high school. But there wasn't really a focus on it. It was like, you know, at the most 2 hours a week.
Oh, okay.
What happened was that during high school, my art teacher would really get focused on me because he found out, she's got a bit of talent. So after high school, at graduation, he went to see my father to see if he would allow me to go to the Royal Academy. And my father said, no, that's not going to happen. My daughter is not going to be a drug addict.
No, of course.
Artist equals drug addict.
Yeah.
Wow.
We deviants.
Yeah, no, we're deviants in different ways. But oh my goodness.
More and drug addicts.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And alcoholics.
All of them.
Or alcoholics, yeah.
Or depressed.
And depressed. Don't forget depressed.
Oh my goodness. So your dad said no, and what did you do?
Well, actually, he had signed me up for a kind of a secretary academy.
What?
Oh, yeah. So
typewriter.
The first day I came in, there was a pile of books on my desk, and I'm looking around, and you got to understand, this girl was like, you know, jeans and T-shirts and stuff like that. And I'm looking around, and I see all these little girls with pearl necklace and, you know, looking fine and dandy, and I'm going, okay. And I open, and there was the etiquette of the good secretary.
Oh my goodness.
And the first line I read was, a good secretary makes a coffee for her boss and waters his plants.
That's true. It's true.
And I'm going, like, I ain't going to do that.
Same thing in Austria.
I'm
a
just
good
laughing
secretary
right
makes
now
coffee and waters the plants.
I'm like horrible at making coffee, number one, fired. And then second of all, I'm a plant killer. So like two times fired. Like,
yeah,
I
wouldn't have lasted very long.
No, I just stood up. Left the classroom, went to the administration, called my father. This isn't the time that we didn't have cell phones or anything.
Or beepers.
And I said, did you pay? And he said, no, not yet. I said, don't bother. It's not going to happen. So then he sent me off for a week or two, three. That was the original plan. For a holiday, I stay away 3 months.
Okay.
So
where did you adventure to?
I went to France and Curacao. Mm. Had the greatest holiday ever. Forgot time. And at one point, I think my father sent somebody to the house of my friends to inquire if I was still there. And if so, whenever I, you know, plan to go back, and I said, oh, shoot, I forgot the time.
I should probably go back.
So I did. Yeah.
And when you returned, what did you find?
My father, who told me that I could leave my suitcase packed.
Oh.
So I did. I just left home.
Wow. How old were you when you left home?
18.
18.
Wow. Yeah. You're brave.
And I moved in with my boyfriend, my then boyfriend. And we lived together for 3 years. Then realized that we were great friends, but nothing else.
It happens.
Yeah. But by that time, we had bought a house.
Nice.
A house with a boyfriend that is only a friend.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not working. Mm-hmm. So we split up. We shared the loss of the house, and that was it. And then I said, okay, no more, you know, BS. I'm just going to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, over the years, little by little, I started painting more and more because I had just dropped everything. You know, I didn't think about it. I was doing sketches, I was doing drawings, but I wasn't. And then when I was 24, I was like, there's definitely something missing. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of mine said to me, but look what you did on your walls. So I had painted a fireplace on my wall because I had a date, stuff like that. I would do that, you know. I always dreamt of this beautiful date with, you know, your fireplace. Didn't have a fireplace.
So you painted a fireplace for your
date. Fireplace. Yeah.
Oh, and I put this little bathrobe, you know, in front of it, so that was my bare skin. You know, yeah, gotta be creative. No money.
Make it work.
Make it work.
Imagination.
So, and he said, why don't you go and apply for the academy? And first I went to Amsterdam, and they looked at my work. Now, you gotta understand that at that time I was just doing, you know, cute sketches of cats and dogs and flowers and everything that I saw. And they said to me, no, you're too sweet. Okay, that's the first. So I went back
home. It was probably a man who said that.
Well, this was a group of men, actually. They looked at my work and they were like, no, this is not acceptable. This is too sweet.
If only they knew that gifts of cats and dogs now are so popular. There
you
go.
Well, not only that, I'm so grateful I never did a unicorn.
Oh.
because I was thinking, you know what, they would kill me on the spot if I did a unicorn.
It'd be the end of you.
And didn't go to that level, unicorn. Okay, anyway, so I went back home to The Hague because this was at the Rietveld Academy in Amsterdam. And I said, okay, let's start painting stuff that's not so sweet. So I would paint people on bicycles and things like that, anything, you know, ordinary. And then I fell in love with photos of a Dutch photographer that were doing mostly Japanese geishas, Japanese hookers. Geishas and hookers, not the same thing. So I really fell in love with this work, so I started painting that. And then I was invited through a friend to have a show where the Japanese ambassador would be.
Wow.
And this was like, I had like five large paintings and that was it. And he was looking and he said, finally a Westerner who understands Japanese eyes, because I made them all cross-eyed. And I'm going like, so look, I said, yeah, but that's what I saw in the photography. And we were talking about it and he really liked it. So through his secretary, they bought one of the paintings.
Wow.
So that really gave me something like, okay, actually I can paint apparently. People like what I do. So then yes, I was 27 when I applied for the Knight Academy at the Royal Academy. Because I figured, you know, I got to pay for materials, I got to do this, I got to do that, so. And I put my stuff there, put the light, I was really placing it. Didn't know that somebody was watching me doing that. Just based on that, I was already in.
Wow. So it was the curation of your work that already got you in.
Yeah, just that, because they said, you know, everybody's a raw talent, doesn't matter what you do, but somebody who just places it and put a book on a table and one painting, that's not curating. But I was making sure that they would look at the right things and, you know, so yeah, OCD kicked in and it worked.
I think each artist has to have their own level of OCD for their own artwork to curate.
It has to be, yeah. You gotta have OCD when you do curating. I'm even like this bad that when I'm in a show and a painting is not hanging straight,
people
have to hold me back for not just
fixing it right there
in a museum.
I mean, it makes me just close my eyes and just scream. It's horrible.
I had it in a museum even.
Yeah, standards.
And then really that I said to one of the, you know,
I'll talk
guards,
to an attendant. Yes.
Listen, the painting is not
I'm
hanging straight.
I'm that person.
And the guys look
I
at
love
me like,
you so much right now, Monique, because I'm like, am I the
you
only
don't place? Just go and fix
no.
it. It's like you're just
look,
like,
if you know the artist, maybe,
I do that too.
But if I
do
don't
that
know the
too.
Artist, then you have to
if
talk
I
to somebody.
If I have a problem with the artwork when I'm in the show, I just fix it. I just do it.
I do that
I don't
too.
Care.
No.
If it's my artwork, I fix it.
Yeah.
No, I have been once too close to a painting, and they kicked me out of the museum. I wasn't touching it.
In Miami?
No. This was in Holland.
In Miami, you would have to throw out half of the people that go to museums.
No, this was at the Maurits house, and I was like 15. And when I was a kid, I loved paintings. I loved artwork. I was mesmerized how, you know, old masters would paint. But also Mondrian and stuff like that. So my mom would often take me to museums. I was like this drooling kid, you know, from room to room. I was drooling. And so I think there was kind of that thing. And one time, and it actually was with a Vermeer. And Vermeer paintings are small. Whatever people think, they're really like, you know.
You know, because they zoom them in so large in the box.
They're like letter size or something.
Yeah.
Mm. I think you would have to get close to see it.
No, you don't have to be that close. I was so close that my breath set the alarm off. And before I knew it, somebody would just grab me, you know, by my shoulders, drag me away. I was kicked out. And my mother was in another room and she didn't know.
And you were a kid?
I was 15. Mm-hmm. And I should have known better.
How close
but
is too
I
close?
I really, really, really wanted to see it. And it was a piece that wasn't as even worse. It was in a show where the piece came from Dublin.
So it was on loan.
On loan.
So I'm there breathing, you know, hot air.
You're breathing on the lawn painting.
Not only that, but it's, you know, it's only one of those in the whole series, and you know, and I'm breathing on it. Yeah, that's me.
Oh, it's so funny. But you have
they gave me permission soon to after that to come back.
Oh, that's great.
How long were you banned from the museum?
Only a couple of months, because I wrote them a letter begging them to let me come back.
No way.
And I promised that I would keep
you would not breathe on
no arm's length, they said to me.
That's what we teach the kids in the museum too, yeah. 2 feet. Yep. 2 to 3 feet, arm's length.
Arm's length.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. Banned from the museum as a 15-year-old.
I know.
Wow. Had to write them a letter to
get
back in.
That was not in the 30-second bio.
No, that was. Well, that's why we're doing
this is
the extended version right now.
This is a summary, okay?
This is the extended version. So you get into school, and then what happens after they're like, oh, you're in. You know how to curate your own stuff.
Well, then you realize that your life stops, because it's 4 nights a week. Plus homework, plus the weekends and everything else, and you don't have a life, but it's fantastic.
Oh, it's amazing.
But you were working during the day, had a day job, and then you went to school at night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they would, and believe it or not, at that time I was working as a secretary.
Oh my God, Dad was so proud. So proud.
Did you write your dad a letter? Dear Dad, guess what? Not only am I a secretary, but I'm also going to the Royal Academy.
I love how to water plants.
P.S. I love you.
Anyway, so
no drugs.
I would come in, you know, with my secretary outfit, because there's a dress code, apparently. That wasn't always good at it.
Pearls,
but,
and
you tried skirts.
No, I love pearls. I can't, you know, but I don't like pearl necklace.
The strands, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so and the first night I walked in, people were looking at me like I was going to teach them something. So I'm just sitting down with the rest of them. And we're all sitting in a circle, and people started looking at me, expecting me to say something. So I said, hi. And everybody, hi, back. And I'm like, wow. That's a good start, right? And then a teacher came in with T-shirt and ripped jeans and everything. And he says, well, we first lesson is about colors. And everybody looked at me, and I said, I don't know why you thought I was going to teach you. I'm sorry. I wasn't even the oldest, I mean, no.
It was the outfit. Really.
It was the outfit.
Oh, it's wow. So funny what an outfit will do. It'll make you so authoritative, like versus like if you just dress like what you want to dress like.
I look like a bitch in a secretary outfit. Don't wear it anymore. Don't worry.
No, you're so friendly looking, and people approach you, they just want to hug you, so it's completely, you don't
well,
have that anymore.
You know, I'm really tall. And
You're way taller than me, and that doesn't happen a lot in Miami.
Well, how tall are you?
175.
You're not 175.
You're taller. 175 centimeters.
Yeah, that 175. That's what I am as well.
I slouch.
I'm 180.
Yeah, see,
yes.
I'm maybe 178, but
no,
I'm not.
You're 178 because I'm 175.
Maybe, yeah.
So, and for
the
folks
people
who doesn't
in the United
know
States,
what that
by
is
way,
in inches,
that means I'm 5'9", you're 5'10",
and
you're
5'11".
5'11".
One.
A room full of glamazons right now.
They're all tall here in the
yeah,
city.
Yeah, in this country of Smurfs.
Yeah, we could kick people with our long legs, but we won't because we're nice.
Yes, the problem was always the slow dance, you know, in high school.
Short guys, yeah.
And everybody like, wanted to, oh, can I have a slow? No, go away. It's an eyesight. I know.
You're so funny. So your
good
first
times.
Class was color theory.
Good
I
times.
Enjoyed color theory myself. And you had like the usual traditional classes and stuff.
Yes and no, because it was night school, they really focused on the first year on all the basics. Mm. So portrait, letter painting, stuff like that. But really like...
Rigorous.
And each night you would go home and have an assignment that you would have to hand in the next week. So that means you come home after 3 hours of, you know, 8 hours work, take a break, 3 hours class, take a break, and you would be home by 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would basically...
Do the homework.
Start my homework, because otherwise I would not be able to finish it. And after, you know, 2 months of falling behind, you know, oh, no, I have to catch up. So that was really the routine. That's why I said life stops.
Yeah.
Completely.
But it was great. I really enjoyed it for as long as it lasted.
So let's talk about that moment.
Semester
so you
number two.
Did not get only kicked out of the museum. You got also kicked out of art school.
Yeah.
How did you?
You're
do
such
that?
A what, deviant.
What did you breathe on?
My teacher. No, we got into a big fight.
No.
I participated in competitions, and he did too, and I won a couple.
Ooh.
And then he implied that I won because I was the pretty girl.
No, he didn't.
Like this. And we're not going to say like what.
Oh my goodness.
Breathing on something else.
Oh yeah, and it wasn't a microphone.
No, he didn't. I hate that. That is horrible.
Yeah, I thought so too, so I punched him in the face.
You physically attacked him.
No,
it
wasn't really attacking.
It was really physically.
No,
it was just punching him in the face.
Oh, come on. If somebody
I
says
can't
that,
believe he said that to you.
In the classroom.
In front of all your classmates. I'm dying right now. That's horrible.
So that was it. And I'm not the one who going bitch slapping.
Did he get fired?
No, I was expelled.
Ooh. I feel like now we should write a letter to the Royal Academy.
Oh, that teacher's long gone.
Oh, and well, there you go. Karma.
Well, the sad thing was that I met him a couple of times after I left. They didn't officially expel me. What they said, I couldn't come back until I apologized.
No.
And you didn't apologize, obviously.
No, that was, you know, with the birdie.
No, horrible.
Oh, God.
So, and in hindsight, I'm sad about it because I always said if I just didn't punch him, or file complaint.
Totally.
Then it would not have escalated the way it did. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry about it, you know. I think it was a stupid thing that I did. Seriously. Because when you don't finish, you know, there's a lot of things that you don't really get from what you could learn.
Mm-hmm. You could always go back.
So
on vacation, take a few classes.
Did you ever consider going to a different school or like to finish it somewhere else?
No, because my life took a whole different turn. Mm-hmm. And art became secondary for me. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, it was always there. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, it was always there. And even if I would work at an engineering company, they would come to me and say, can you do this with Photoshop? Yeah, sure. You know, so
it always stayed with you.
Even in my last job in Holland, I had this leadership training. I'm still laughing about it.
Leadership trainings are the funniest ever. It's like really hilarious.
Well, you are capable of being a leader, so it's nice.
Well,
to hear.
I was the head of a department there, and somehow they selected me as they thought I had leadership qualities. And I always said, whoever chose me must have smoked something so damn good. And somehow, you know, my photo passed by, and I go like, yeah, that girl rocks. Let's give a leadership training. I never understood that. Anyway, so I got that. And then at the end, we had this assignment where as a group, we had to give something back to the ministry. And we said, okay, we will give something back in the shape of a little statue, and that we would give ourselves because we earned the statue. And we would give it to some other people that helped us during this year of leadership training. And the other thing was that we had all these questions that we wrote down, and we would make posters of them. And these were questions to question your work. So it was not about politics or what was going on. No, it was really about what work means to you. You know, it was being deeper about it, because a lot of people just go to work, it's work.
Paycheck.
Mm-hmm. That's it. But you're sitting there 8 hours a day. You're being there. You're being lived for 8 hours a day. But it doesn't make sense to me.
It should be meaningful.
What it did to me was that I realized I didn't want to do that anymore.
Great leadership training.
Like, as a leader, I choose to no longer be here.
Yeah, that basically that was it.
Wow.
So I made the statue. I went to, you know, have it done in bronze and everything else.
Lovely. Oh, yeah. Where were you? You knew a workshop where you were able to do that in bronze, or you? Wow.
No, it was. I went to a foundry, and they liked the figurine, and they were going like, "Yeah, we'll do that." So, money in. We had a, you know, budget for it.
Yeah.
And, but you know, my last work situation was really cool for me. They allowed me a lot. And when I met the hitman, I went back and forth traveling. And so they allowed me to take 14 days, 3 weeks in a row, a couple of times a year, because I would be with, you know, the rest of the year I was there working, and they knew. Mm. So they gave me a lot of slack. I had a great team. I had 3 secretaries and 2 assistants, and they were terrific. So it was really, you know, this whole thing. It was a great job, and I was a pampered pooch.
You just decided it wasn't for you, but
no, you know what? In the end, it doesn't matter anything. You know, you can go to the hairdresser 3 times a week and have a massage and have your nails done, and I don't know what not, and you can make a ton of money. In the end, it doesn't mean a thing if you're not doing what you should be doing. And I realized that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is, like, for artists, it's the hardest thing to realize that, you know, you kind of have to do a job, or a lot of us have to do a job to kind of pay for studios and materials. Yep. And be able to do it. But in the end, it's really the art making that makes everything else worth, you know, worth yeah. it. So, yeah. I mean, you go to work because
you need
it.
When people say sacrifice, I'm going like, no. That's not a sacrifice. Mm. It's just, you know, going, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
What you have to do.
Yeah.
I mean, the hitman in the beginning had problems with me standing up in the middle of the night because I had to make that sketch. And he was like, what? No, it's okay. Just let me. But you have to understand that in the beginning, we were living in a, what do you call it, efficiency. Mm-hmm. So where I was drawing on the wall, I had papers on the wall.
Was that here in Miami?
Mm-hmm.
Was that here in Miami, Florida?
Yeah.
Can we discuss how you journeying out to Miami happened? So, like, retrace a few
by
steps?
Plane, not by boat.
By plane.
She didn't roll over the Atlantic.
You no. didn't take a train from Europe? That was impossible. What?
Across the Atlantic? Actually, I walked to the station with a train, went to Schiphol, Amsterdam, with a plane to Miami, and. Yeah. Well,
about a boy. How did you meet him?
On the internet.
Match.com.
That's lovely. Oh, yes.
Dating site.
I love that. That's a great story.
It was a dating site. A friend of mine was on it, and she told me, oh, this is great. All rich guys. And I said, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, dating sites, all rich guys. And
that's funny.
She put my photo on it.
Ooh, without
with
you
my
knowing.
Information, and I said, "Yeah, sure." And I was
go
laughing, and then I got the first response. And you have to reply because it's kind of, you know, lingers on your computer. And this is in the old days where you didn't want anything lingering on your computers because everything took space, too much space. This is like, you know, nothing compared to what we have now.
AOL 1.0 or something.
No, you remember those sounds when you had the dialogue?
The ding ding
that one.
Yeah.
Where you actually wanted to shoot your screen down.
Yeah, like, hurry up. Yeah.
So he was lingering on the screen.
At one point he was lingering on my screen, but he said something really nice, and it was different from the usual, you know, compliments. But it was well thought, and I liked that because I was like, that's different. So we started chatting, and we did that for a couple of weeks, and then he asked me if it was okay to call me. And I said, okay. I mean, what's the worst that can happen is get rid of him and get rid of the number, right? That's it. So he called me, and the first call, we were on the phone for about 6 hours.
Wow.
Still didn't know what he looked like. I didn't know.
There was no picture involved?
There was a picture, but I couldn't really see it because, you know, every screen definition
is the pixelation was like...
So... And then he sent me pictures. He sent me pictures by email, but I could only see his daughter, not him. And I'm like, what the hell? So when he finally came to Europe, he came to Europe first, and he had to go to Italy. But he said, I can stop in Holland, and you know. And I thought, well, we can be adults about it, you know. If it doesn't work, I put him in a hotel. If it does work, you know, if you like each other, well,
he can stay with me.
You stay with me, and I'm going. That's the plan. So, and then. In Amsterdam, when you land and you pick up your luggage, there's a wall of mirrors. But us, you know, people picking you up are there.
We could see.
In this time, really picking you up. So, and I'll go like, I hope it's him. So I'm calling him, and it was him. And I'm going like, yeah, I got the right one.
Yay. Yep. Pressure's off.
Yes.
And he lived here, so that's why you would visit.
So then the next trip was here. And then the second trip that I came here was on September the 2nd of 2001.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Mm. So that was kind of a strange, you know, thing to go through with the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. And but when I came back to Holland, you know, because you go through a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. And that little time, and I had to stay at least a week longer because the planes were not flying. Mm-hmm. And so that was basically as I knew, this is the guy for me, because I felt safe with him. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, you know, yeah.
That was a test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you left your job and moved here. We're lucky. We're lucky.
That was after 5 years.
Wow.
I didn't do it overnight. No. He even sent me a ring with diamonds. So, and my secretary was on the phone with him to get the response. And I knew she was watching, so I didn't respond. I wasn't going like, oh my God, no, I didn't do that. I stayed cool. And then I heard my secretary. I don't know if she opened it because she's not responding at all. And then I just gave her the birdie. Letting her know that I knew. So, yeah.
Oh my God.
So wonderful.
So that was, when did you move to Miami?
Officially.
I moved in 2006 to Miami.
So you have been here for a while now. You've been here for 12 years.
Yeah.
13 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And was it like right away when you moved to Miami that you were able to make art like full time, or
no,
or
not at all. In the beginning, it was like I did a lot of drawing because I didn't know where to buy anything here, mm-hmm. and neither did he, because why would he look around for art supplies?
He wasn't an artist, yeah.
And some people will hate me now. The first art shop or art supply shop that I went to was Pearl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not that bad. That's kind of nostalgic. There's a Pearls in
New
York. And
they had the best canvas.
The Pearls we had here closed up.
Okay.
Granted, it was pricey.
I was used to
and the service
Dutch
was horrible.
Stores.
Oh. No
and
comparison.
For me, that was like...
Ew. No comparison.
Are the Dutch stores really good?
Oh, fuck yeah. It's like the biggest candy stores for art.
No way.
Yes. There were two stores that I would go in The Hague. And...
You were spoiled.
Of course,
they had everything.
I cannot make any commercial for them, but they were called Goedman. So anytime you go to Holland, people, go to Goedman.
I
want to go now.
It's
so good.
It's not. You know what? It's like this. It's a small store, but it's from the bottom to the top.
Packed.
Filled with stuff.
Packed.
Amazing.
So you come in and you smell oil paints and you smell varnishes and you smell the canvases and you smell everything, and then you pass by the papers and you can touch everything, and there's nobody looking at you like, are you going to steal something?
Are you
because
gonna
it's
buy
so
that?
Jam-packed, you cannot steal. And the store is filled with people.
All the time.
Wow.
So it's really like, you know, it's like a small little thing. It's like a small grocery store.
I love that idea, though, like a perfume line, like varnish, oil paint, canvas.
I mean,
I would buy that.
Perfume for artists. You know, I like artists
so
and craftsmen,
because I love Artists and Craftsmen.
And because it has the same feel, even though it's a lot larger, it has the same feel. And it's, you know, you...
It's like this candy store feel where you can really
I call John the candy man because you know what? Every time I go there, it makes me happy.
And you discover new things. Like they have like all these different pens or markers, you know, that they always get the newest ones or they get the better ones. They have all the paint that you could possibly need and the canvases and the rolls. It's like dreamland.
So compare that to Pearl.
Yeah, I actually have never physically been in a Pearl store. I only ordered like the canvas on the rolls, and that was the cheapest way to get it. I ordered it from San Francisco, actually, and they still had this one store in New York, I think, where you could order canvas, and then they shut down everything. But I never set foot in a Pearl store like
now. New York is also shut down.
The one that was in Canal, they closed down everything
because they were still sending out canvas for a while. But now they closed down everything.
Wow.
So I actually never set foot in a Pearl store.
Sorry, Pearl.
I know. R.I.P.
Didn't mean it, Pearl.
So sad. You live on in the memory of us, I guess, and in the archive now.
So that was the first shop that I saw.
Pearl.
Thank God I didn't go to Michael's then, because I would have gone completely depressed.
You would have moved back.
Yeah,
I feel like it's a craft store, and I love like glitter and all kinds of things, but it's not.
If you want canvases, you have to go to Michael's. And I didn't go to Michael's up to 2017. That was the first time I stepped into Michael's. And
you were happy.
Never again.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever
it
again.
It has, like, for example, Lisa and I put the show together. We really needed a Cricut, like a vinyl cutter. Awesome. Michael has it. For sometimes I was like getting the frames there, photo frames there, like cheap ones. Michael had it. However, the feel of an art store that, like, how I feel like where I can just say,
if you're a fine artist, I mean,
Artists and Craftsmen is really the only one.
I don't want to sound
like a snob, but there I feel like a snob.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I'm going like, I'm looking at it and I'm going like, but this is not how you should sell art supplies. It's not nice. Their focus is really on crafts
and commercial.
And I respect that, you know. But don't tell me you're an art supply store.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, everybody was telling me, "Oh, you can get the best canvases at Michael's."
No.
Hell no.
Did U-Truck exist? U-Truck should have existed.
I found them very expensive. Sorry, Utrecht.
Utrecht changed it to
Dick Blick.
They're together now.
Yeah.
And so at one point, I found out that I could buy a lot of art supplies online through ASW.
Okay.
And that was a wholesaler. So, you know, I would
bulk.
Just...
Yeah, totally.
I would buy bulk because I was going like, I need it anyway. I'm going to use it. So. Yeah.
And you were already trained, so you knew how to cut your own canvas, put your own gesso, stretch your own, you know, like.
Well, stretching, I was never good at stretching. I'm still not good at stretching.
Kind of wonky.
No one is really good at stretching things, right?
Some people
no, it looks
are.
Like funky.
Some people
no,
are really good.
Really?
Yeah.
You are?
I'm not, but I know people who are. Well, Twok.
Michael?
Yeah.
you already
our friend
know.
Michael.
You
already know. He's really good at it. Yeah.
It's a science.
It's a science.
Yeah, I know it is. We tried it with a small one the other day and it still looked...
But you know, one thing that my husband used is like this toolie where you can really stretch it.
It's a clampy. You use a clampy tool. It pulls some stretches.
If you have a clampy tool, that helps a lot. Yeah.
Well, we had those... it isn't the official clamping tool, but you can make two and hold it down and everything else, but still, it looked warped.
Mm-hmm.
It's the folding in the corners that I, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not good in wrapping gifts, so that's...
Oh, I'm really good at wrapping gifts, actually. I've always loved doing it. I'm really good at it.
Talk about being humble.
But, no,
like
not at all. No, I'm good at wrapping
OCD.
Gifts.
That's OCD going on here.
I'm so good at it.
I always loved it, and I always packed all the presents for Christmas. It
I'm
was
bringing
me.
Like my presents now.
Yeah, I'm really
so you can
good
wrap
at it.
Them.
So
I've been watching those, you know, the YouTube University for wrapping presents.
Really?
And then I found out it's really nice and neat if you do that little where you tear it off fold it in.
That's what I do.
Yeah, you gotta fold it in.
You fold it in, girl.
You always have to. And then everything has to be folded in.
Yes, everything needs to be folded in. I forget half of it, you know. So it still looks like. I even took, what is the Japanese folding?
Origamis. Little cranes.
I took it here in the bakehouse for workshop.
When did you find out about the bakehouse?
That was in 2012.
Okay, so you got here in 2006, so it wasn't until 6 years later. And your art supplies, did you start making art right after buying, or did you just, like, let it be, sit?
No, I really bought to make.
Nice.
So a lot of these things that I did in the beginning, I painted over it again. Because, well, you don't always have money for new stuff, so...
So you're like the masters. We have to, like, do x-rays of your work to see, like,
if you x-ray my stuff, you're in for hefty surprises.
Now I have to see the x-ray. There has to be something underneath it. That's so funny. When did you start at the, I want to call it McCormick's. That's when we first met, at McCormick's space. When did you find out about that artist residency?
Actually, that I didn't know. Well, I went to the opening party of the McCormick because Ernesto Kunde told me about it. He was hanging there with work. And... So that was basically my introduction to the McCormick. That was it. And for a year, nothing. And then Eliezer Delgado, who had the seventh floor, came to my house for whatever reason to look at my art. And he said, "Why aren't you in a studio?" And I said, "Because I can't afford it." And he says, "Well, I have a room on the seventh floor and you can paint there. Because you need your work need to be shown. It's crazy that you're not showing anywhere and everything." And I was like, "Okay." And I said, "How much?" He said, "No. But you start selling, you start paying rent."
It's amazing.
Yeah. So I got in there, and soon after I started selling.
Wow.
So it was an eye opener for me how much a studio can do for you.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, McCormick had this plan of creating this art hub there. Things didn't work out, and it's a shame. And but at one point, we became this. The seventh floor became like an item on itself.
Family.
And we had a lot of artists showing with us. And that was fun, you know. We had this once a month a new show and everything else, and then our own work, which we didn't put in the show, by the way. There was never one of our pieces in the show. We really kept that separate.
We do that too, yeah.
Yeah, because I hate it when artists, I'm sorry, when you have curator artists and they put their own work in it. I'm going like, no, you cannot. Your
everyone's
role today
different.
Is curator, it's not artist.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And some people will not agree with me, I know, but I'm going like, you don't mix the roles. Mm-hmm. It's like friends with benefits. That's a mix-up that you cannot do. You know,
it never works.
Good
it never
metaphor.
Works. It never works.
I like that.
How do you feel that from when you first got here, the community and the friendships you've built from McCormick's as a residency, that
is that the gallery
you?
That you?
McCormick's was, it's located downtown, like when you exit, instead of making a left, you make a right, and then it's like, it has like the little sculptures in the front. It just, it's like most spaces, eventually the prices go up and, you know.
I don't know if there's any artists still left in there.
Maybe designers or something.
Oh, I think I remember.
It's like a choo-choo train painted on the side.
On the side, yeah. Derek Wilson did that mural on the side. And Elias Delgado had they had this elevator shaft on the top. And he put the McCormick, he made the McCormick design there. And what was funny is that I actually, and I have high anxiety, went on the roof with him to help him out. His intern, no, it's not an intern, his resident artist, Barbara de Verona. Mm-hmm. She invited me to help out. And so we went there with several artists. Mm-hmm. And in the blazing sun. But it was amazing. And so it was fun doing that, and it kind of, and after that, when he asked me to be there, I sort of had, okay, because I did something, you know, it's I helped him, he's helping me, and that was really, it was great fun. Mm-hmm. Actually, from the people that were artists there, I don't know so much. I kept really close friends with Eleazar. Mm-hmm. And, but from the years that I came here to visit, mm-hmm. I still know a lot of artists, and that's really nice.
So you never had a studio here, because you came to visit, and you got to know the artists by like peeking in and doing workshops or doing...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was an artist, Irena, that was here, that was on the second
floor?
No, on the second corridor. Mm-hmm. Listen, I didn't know about the second floor, to be honest.
Me either.
That's where we two were, where we met.
Until I applied, I didn't know there was a second floor. It's like
not,
a secret.
Not only
secret.
That, I've never been there until 2016. So, Jason, sorry. It wasn't personal that I never came
That's
to
when
studio.
I moved in. 2016. You came to my studio once, I think. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, upstairs. One of the first time I went up there, And Jason, and she was there, mm-hmm. and there was a guy with this light film
on the corner,
setup.
Like a photographer of sorts. Yeah. That's a different space then. Mm-hmm. Do you have any projects coming up or things you're working on that you'd like to share, or this is the platform for you to tell us stories?
Yeah. Well, right now I'm into animals, and that sounded so wrong.
Going back into your beginnings, because you were sketching cats and dogs, and now here you are.
Doing cats and dogs. Sheep and owls.
I love that.
And the sheep that Elisa picked for the preview, it was like so incredible.
So good. There's a humor to your work, which we didn't even get to discuss your work.
However, we actually have a little bit more time. I was kidding before.
Okay.
There was the self-portraits that you're doing.
Your series of self-portraits.
They're incredible. They're really... I don't know, they're just like really good.
Oh, the selfies, yes.
The selfies, you call them selfies, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did that because I can't make a decent selfie even if my life depended on it. You can ask anyone. If I make a selfie, it sucks. So the nostrils are in there. Even if I go there, there are nostrils in there. I don't know how I do it. And so when I saw all these people, and just Google, for the heck of it, Google selfies. And you see so many selfies, and most of them are taken in the most awkward places in the world. And
I know, toilets, all sorts of random places, and you're like, what are you doing there?
But if you take just the face out of it, out of the context, you get the most amazing expressions. Mm-hmm. So I started painting those, and from there, I actually did for a show in March, I did seven expressions based on the actress Eva Green. Mm-hmm. I love her. And she might not be the world's best actress, but she has this face that's so natural but very expressive.
She's beautiful too.
She's very beautiful. But she also reminds me of Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she has a very European face.
She has a European, it's like the cheekbones and the eyes she is.
So when I see her, I'm going like, oh, I always wanted to. I saw the series where she was in, and I was like, oh, I got to do something with that. Mm-hmm. And so I made from her, every actor, actress makes these expression sheets. Mm-hmm. So I started making really small drawings of that. And that really, you know, got me to something else that I realized. I've always been, in the last couple of years, painting children. With these big eyes, and some
rosy
call them,
cheeks,
and the reason why I did that was because when I, you know, as an artist, you observe a lot of time. You're just looking at things, and I noticed that kids, when they are on their phones or the pads, if something happens, they look up, and that split second that they look under the eyebrows, I noticed that, and I'm going like, oh my god, that's that moment that they're not really into you, but that's, you know, that in between. So I use that as a fixed expression in my paintings. But at a certain point, you want to, you know, go on and do different things. So my children started to get older. So Eva Green was really for me to step out of it again. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of just a big announcement. People leaving the children behind me.
No.
Yes.
I love like the little like baby Basquiat and the baby Warhol and like the.
Oh yes. Well, you know what?
Woman with the pearl earring, but it's a baby version.
I'm actually going to start a whole new series, and that's also about observation, but it won't be about the eyes anymore, because. These paintings were really about the eyes that I did with the children.
The glance, yeah.
And I want to let that go, and I want to go in a whole different avenue. So the animals is for me, again, the transition and my bread and butter at this time. So, yeah, you know, it's I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be large paintings, not mm-hmm. the little ones that I'm doing now with the animals. So yeah, and I'm not going to tell anything anymore, and I don't know what I'm going to do with these large paintings. I have no clue. I just need to do them.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's something that speaks true to being an artist, that sometimes it's not about where it's going to live or how it's going to be exhibited, but you have to do it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. We're excited for you.
We're already at our final question.
No!
You've been sitting in a magical rocking chair,
yeah.
And he grants you three wishes. You can wish for anything and everything, but you have to say it out loud for it to come true. Mm-hmm. These are the rules of the rocking chair. So what are your three wishes?
Oh, shoot.
Such a hard question.
Okay, first of all, first wish is that I can paint until the end of days.
Yes, that's a good one.
Second wish that I have is... Oh, shoot. Oh, this is hard, actually, because that was...
That's why it comes at the very end, because it's so hard.
I know, this is so good. Second wish is that I get more time for my wishes.
Okay. Which we're going to grant you right
now.
Take as long as you need.
Take all the time you need.
I would want to have a good show. I mean, a really good show at a good spot. And I'm having a show right now, you know, in the group shows that I'm in now are good. I'm in the Miami Art Deco Museum.
Nice.
In South Beach. And I have one of my chairs there. So I'm really proud of that. And that will be until September. And I'm in the Sagamore with two paintings,
one
of David Bowie with big eyes, mm-hmm. and one of Billie Holiday without the big eyes. And so that will be till the end of the month.
Cool.
And that, by the way, is a beautiful show because so many artists, you know, really famous worldwide artists and local artists.
Are together in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good combination. Mm-hmm. And so if you still have time, go to the Sagamore, go to my... okay, enough of that. But really like a top-notch show. Mm-hmm. And that was my second wish. And my third wish is... Oh yeah, happily ever after with the Hitmen.
Yay! I think you've got the third one and the second
one. That
one
pretty well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was pretty painless.
Surprisingly.
Thank you for coming to sit down with us, Monique.
Thank you for the invitation.
It only took 2 years after the first exhibit that we had when I'm like, would you like to do this? And you're like, yeah, sure, sign me up. Here we are.
Yes.
Gute Dinge braucht Weile.
Right?
Yep, it's a good wine.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening in again. We're going to be back next week with a new rocking chair session.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.